You and I with a busy get-together on Tuesday, January 7th, 2025 on Connecticut Today. I started the show by warning folks not to expect any substantive changes or policy positions from the General Assembly regarding energy and electric rates in Connecticut. Connecticut Inside investigative reporter Mark Fitch stopped by to talk about a controversy surrounding Public Utilities Regulatory Authority Chairwoman Marissa Gillette. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio dropped by for her weekly spot to chat about this week's start of the new General Assembly session, while CBS News correspondent Aaron Navarro updated us on the Trump White House transition from West Palm Beach, Florida.
So all of a sudden now, everybody and their mother and uncle and grandfather and grandson and cousin and niece and nephew, everybody's talking about energy policy. We're going to attack energy policy now, coming up starting tomorrow, Wednesday the 8th, as the General Assembly kicks off the long session. So at least half of the General Assembly will have 6 months to screw up our lives. But having said that, I kid the majority, although this time I don't. Look, trust me on this, and I hate to start this off on a sour note, but I'm just kind of giving you an idea here as to the amount of garbage you're going to start hearing over the next 2 or 3 days. And everybody's going to hear the governor's address tomorrow in the General Assembly, and I'm sure he's going to be, you know, very concerned and sincere about what he says. But if you read a lot of these stories, including a story at News 8, WTNH.com, by our pal, our buddy Mike Cerulli, who's on the weekends here on Saturday morning from 10 to 1 right here on WICC, everybody said, well, we're going to tackle energy policy. We're going to lower energy costs for consumers. No, you're not. And I understand people in both parties have to say what they're going to say. I get it. I understand it. But nothing's going to change. If you think any time in the next 4, 5, or 6 years that your electric rates are going to go down, or that anything the General Assembly does is going to help your electric rates, you're out of your minds. You need time off. You need a nice, warm vacation. Go down and see the kids. Go see Grandma and Grandpa. Because it's not going to happen. Because we already see the entrenched arrogance of the majority in Hartford already saying, well, no, that six-point plan that the Republicans want to put in, no, that's not going to happen. Says right here in this story by our pal Mike Cerulli, weekends here on WICC, Democratic State Rep. Jonathan Steinberg said he opposes an idea related to the public benefits charge and notes the charge that drove much of last summer is higher than expected bills will be going away this May. Well, then, if it's going away, Representative Steinberg, then pass a law that says it can't come back, but they won't do that. And if you're going to have a public benefits charge in that law where you mandate that it will never show up on electric bills once again, you say it will be a separate budget item. But you don't want to do that because you want the people that have to bail out the have-nots again in this state. It's the same old drivel we hear every other year. Representative Steinberg says he's a proponent of measures like the adoption of smart meters intended to lower community consumer costs. Do you know how long it's going to take to put those smart meters in? First of all, PURA, the Public Utility Regulatory Authority, they still haven't even approved a smart meter plan. But, that's going to lower rates. Now it may. You know those rates will be lowered in 2050. What are we in, 2025 now? Now, Representative Steinberg is spot on here. He cautioned his colleagues about the prospect of overpromising to ratepayers about what's feasible in this year's legislative session. Quote, we do not want to be pandering to ratepayers by suggesting there are easy short-term answers that are going to have significant impact on their bills. He's right there. But that's the whole point. You need long-term planning, which there is no, listen to me carefully. There is no stomach at the General Assembly by the Democratic majority to do anything long term on this. There just isn't. Well, why do you say that, Paul? Because if there was, you would have seen initiatives in years past to, A, build more power generating plants in this state. They don't have to be unwieldy, but we would have seen initiatives to build more power generating facilities in this state. We don't have that. Never happens. Because the majority in Hartford is too wedded to the far left and the environmentalists. You would have seen a greater push by both parties in Hartford to bring in more electricity from Hydro-Québec or to bring in more natural gas. It's not going to happen. Because the minute they do that, here come the lawsuits. Co-chair State Senator Norm Needleman have both been critical of, Eversource. Quote, they've clearly come down on the side of their shareholders over ratepayers here in the state of Connecticut. Well, they're a publicly held company. Representative Steinberg, with all due respect, sir, they're a publicly held company. Instead of you harping on them, and believe me, I have no, you know, I'm not sitting here as a lobbyist for UI or Eversource or anybody, but why don't you people in the General Assembly get off of your asses and do something other than harping at Eversource and UI? Get more power generation in this state. Well, that's almost impossible. Well, try anyway. Get more power generation in this state. Get more natural gas in this state. Get more electricity in this state. Smart meters ain't going to do it. The two Energy Committee co-chairs say strong regulation of the utilities are necessary to guard against unwarranted rate hikes. Okay, but Eversource here, and you know what? Eversource has a point here. Eversource has a point. We'll go over that momentarily. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. We're already starting with this lunacy of everybody pointing a finger at Eversource when they should be pointing a finger at legislators who do nothing to get more power generation in this state. Look, I'm just warning you. And Paulie's trying to be your friend here. And by the way, you can chime in on this if you'd like, because I know you want to, because everybody has to pay an electric bill in this state eventually. Even if you're a renter or you don't pay the bill eventually, those costs trickle down to you. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Your pal in the afternoon, Paul, is warning you, nothing's going to change with electric rates. It's not going to happen. At least in the foreseeable future, maybe your great-grandkids will benefit. But this notion of we're going with smart meters and we're going to leave the public benefits charge there. Do you understand? I'm trying to save you from getting a headache from listening to this over the next couple, 3 weeks by the majority party in Hartford. There's no seriousness behind this. This is all going to be unencumbered by the thought process, as the great Click and Clack used to say for years. It's all unencumbered by the thought process. You can talk all the smart meters you want. You can talk about all the, moving this charge and that charge around, the public benefits charge. None of this is relevant to the fact that we need more power. We need to generate our own power because we are surrounded by states and by people in this state that won't let us bring in any more power. We need to build power plants in this state. There was a mention of it the other day. There's a big story. Hey, all these data centers want to move to Connecticut. And the governor and the General Assembly are like, geez, these are great. They pay taxes. Yeah, they need gobs of power to run. Where is it? We don't have it right now. We need to do everything we can do. If we're serious, now, usually a lot that goes on in the General Assembly is not serious. In fact, it's Olympic-level comedy. But we need to somehow stop listening to the far left in this state and generate power. Build some power plants, figure out what to do, import more natural gas. Maybe you set up more solar panel farms. Maybe you do that. Maybe you set up these small fuel cells, whatever, but we better get cracking. We got more and more people buying EVs out there. We have more and more people wanting to locate businesses here, ostensibly, supposedly, until you tax them to death. But don't fall, I'm begging you, don't fall for the pontification you're going to hear from the majority in Hartford over the next few weeks. Oh, we're going to tackle energy policy. No, you're not. Because if you were going to do it, you would have done it 10, 15, 20 years ago. And energy customers in this state, with the exception of those like myself who live in a municipality with their own grid, energy customers in this state get screwed. And it's not Eversource's fault. It's not UI's fault, by and large. It's bad planning. And it's kowtowing to the far left. They don't want oil. They don't want coal. They don't want natural gas. What do they want? It's mind-numbing. Stephen Shelton is here to kick us off. Steve, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Great. I'm just listening to you, and I agree with everything that you're saying. There's no proactivity. Mm-hmm. Nobody is actually looking outside the box.
Yep.
But there's a news report that I think you weren't aware of.
Yeah.
The town of Ansonia approved $37 million rent-to-own deal for a hydrogen fuel cell.
Good.
At their site to supply all their schools and all of their buildings. Wait, gets better.
Yeah.
So UI and our good friend Blumenthal upper state,
yeah,
they're stressing that they may supply other towns with energy, that they may become their own electric provider.
How about that, huh? Isn't that something?
Yeah, exactly.
Huh? How about that?
Micro fuel cell. Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You know, listen, as you say, Steve, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Listen, it's not cheap. None of this stuff is cheap. All right? High tech has high price. Remember when the first VCRs came out? Remember that? I still have two or three. How many of us have hundreds of videotapes at home? But seriously, I digress. Remember when VCRs came out? They were $600, $700, $800. Now you can buy them used on eBay for $50. A four-head digital super duper slow-mo high-speed VHS, whatever. Or Betadex. Remember the Betamax? Beta was actually a better picture than VHS, but the VHS licensing was easier. But I digress there, too. And again, this is what we have to do. We have to become proactive here. Proactivity is the way to go. And I know that the people in Hartford are going to say, well, you know, and I agree with the Republicans saying that public benefits, that's got to go. Now, Representative Steinberg and Senator Needleman are saying, well, that's not coming back. Yeah, prove it. It ain't coming back. It's going to go for now. It'll be back. Trust me on this. It'll be back. They want the capacity to put it back. But I got to tell you, there is a great point made. And again, I don't own stock in Eversource. I don't own stock in UI. But in our buddy Mike Cerulli's story here is pointed out. Eversource points out that it's only responsible for two of the four items on ratepayers' bills. The company transmits and distributes electricity. It does not generate electricity. And it does not set the public benefits policies. So listen, you can get all cracked off if you want an Eversource, but understand, when you see those four categories on your electric bill, the General Assembly and deals they cut in Hartford are responsible or is responsible for two of those four categories. The two other ones, they're not. Listen, just a little break to Eversource here. I know people like to pound on them, but people have to understand the dynamics of what's going on here. There's an interesting story, and you can see it at insideinvestigator.org. Our friend Mark Fitch is here writing about something that some people say is a big deal, others don't, and it concerns PURA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, and their chairperson, Marissa Gillette. Hey, Mark, it's Paul. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, Paul. How are you?
I'm okay. This is a very long, very detailed story, and I read this last night. I wanted to have you on with this, and it's interesting the way you do the excellent reporting here, Mark, saying that power companies say this is a major thing, and people around Pure are saying, that's not a big deal. And this all has to do with an issue of who's signing off how, right, on some of these decisions. So outline this for my listeners here.
Sure. Yeah, and you're exactly right. It's who's signing off on what decisions. And basically what the utility companies are alleging, and they are, from my understanding, are planning to make a big deal out of this. They're alleging that the PURA chairman, Marissa Gillette, has been issuing decisions, fact-finding decisions, mm-hmm. legal decisions, all on her own, acting as the presiding officer. But when these decisions are made, it's signed by the executive secretary, which gives the impression that it is a decision by the full commission mm-hmm. of, you know, 3 to 4 commissioners, however many are, you know, working right now. And why that matters to the utility companies is if they knew that it was only a decision by one person, by the presiding officer, they could have appealed that decision for a vote to the whole commission.
Mm-hmm.
Since they thought there was a commission decision made by the full authority, they would have to wait to appeal any of it to Superior Court after the whole matter was, you know, said and done with. And I know this sounds like a lot of, you know, kind of legal gobbledygook or whatever, but it does have real world impact on ratepayers. Back when they made the decision in 2023 to extend the state's shutoff moratorium, the COVID era shutoff moratorium for like another year or whatever, mm-hmm. that decision was made under what they call a Gaudiosi decision. It was made only by the presiding officer, Marissa Gillette. There was no vote. There was no appeal. There was nothing like that. And that decision alone added $70 million to that total public benefits charge that everybody is paying right now and was very upset about when they found out about it in July. So this does, you know, there have been, and the utility companies claim there have been about 1,000 substantive decisions made, they say, by Marissa Gillette alone with no vote by the commissioners and no chance for the utility companies to appeal that.
So I'm reading your piece and even in some of the comments at the bottom of the piece, and Mark, you've seen them, and it's like, well, this is not a big deal. This is the utility companies, UI and Eversource and Aquarian, they're just going for scraps here. And it's interesting, Mark, where there seems to be no middle ground here. You know, you've got one side saying, hey, this may be all be patently illegal, and the other side saying, hey, it's no big deal. Who signs off on it? It's the substance of this. So this is really interesting. Where do you think this goes now?
Well, it might be going to civil court, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, it depends on how far the utility companies want to take it. And, you know, the sources I spoke to, they seem to intend to take it quite far. Mm. They are not happy because, I mean, some of these decisions, these decisions issued by, you know, the presiding officer have affected their credit rating, which makes it more expensive for them to do things, which makes it more expensive for us. When the trouble is, you know, when you don't do things kind of by the book.
Yep.
And I think one of the problems here is that, you know, you're supposed to have a commission of 5.
Well,
we've had a commission of 3,
yeah.
And one of them is the, you know, chairwoman.
And Mark, and I just want to step in here and I'll let you finish. But I mentioned this earlier in my show today, knowing you were coming on. And yet when Governor Lamont, Mark, is pushed on this saying, hey, Governor, where are the other 2 people? He kind of sloughs it off, like he doesn't give a credible answer as to why he's essentially violating a state law by not putting 2 other people on PURA here. This is a head scratcher to me.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, House Republican Leader Vin Candelora has raised repeatedly. And you know, I think it's because it's 3 people and things kind of got a little casual, maybe, right? So maybe official, you know, instead of an official vote, it was like, hey, what do you think? Do you have a problem? No, nobody has a problem. So we're just going to do this. The utility companies have filed multiple Freedom of Information requests seeking communications, votes, things that should have been done in issuing these intermediary decisions. And PURA has come back with nothing. So, I mean, in one case, you know, during UI or Aquarian or whoever, they were essentially accusing Marissa Gillette of bias and of illegal communications with a different office. And as far as we can tell, she investigated herself and made the decision that this didn't happen, that there's no bias and that there were no communications. And that's issued under a Gaudiosi decision, a presiding officer decision, essentially.
Yeah.
And when the utility companies tried to file a Freedom of Information request saying, all right, show us the communication on this, show us the votes on this, there was nothing. So that's really, you can't really do that. And I don't think that's very hard for, you know, the average Joe to understand that you can't really just go investigating yourself.
Yeah, and the problem, Mark, this feeds the argument that PURA, no matter what the intentions are of the three people that are on that board plus the chairperson, this is an extra legislative body operating independently outside the General Assembly. And that's why a lot of people would point to what you just said and other stuff and say, hey, this is wrong. Our legislators should vote on this stuff because you get what you pay for or you don't staff properly and you're bound to get this sniping and these sort of controversies.
Well, I mean, they're kind of outside, but they are within the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. It's something that the Republicans have been making hay out of. They want it to be actually outside of that department. And when every commissioner is appointed and serves at the pleasure of the governor, it kind of makes it a political office, right? It's, you know, your boss is the governor and you have to do whatever makes him happy. And your boss is also kind of Katie Dykes, who also, you know, works closely with the governor. So, you know, it's become more of a political office. And, you know, Connecticut's had high electricity rates for, I mean, decades. You know, there's nothing new. But, you know, one of the things that's really come out recently is the public benefits charges and people really paying attention to that. You know, I can tell you right now, I just happen to have it on my desk. I'm looking at my Eversource bill.
Yeah.
And I've got $100 in public benefits charges.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now that that's kind of out in the open, you know, politicians are feeling the heat because that's directly related to things that they're doing.
Absolutely. Folks, check out this story. Go to InsideInvestigator.org, InsideInvestigator.org. The authority, PURA chair, secretly issues decisions under the secretary's name. Mark Fitch, the guest. Hey, Mark, thank you. As always, great work. Keep on trucking, and we'll connect down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, Paul.
All right. So there you go, folks. All right. Well, it's about that time of the year when our next guest overdoses on CTN. Yes, our fine folks, Bill Bavacqua and the gang there, the Connecticut Network, ct-n.com, watched by you and I and Megan Portfolio of the Hartford Portfolio Yankee Institute. Good afternoon, Ms. Portfolio. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. And it's actually funny you say that because, you know, my New Year's resolution, it's a lame one, but I wanted to get back into running. So it's just too cold for me.
No,
outside.
I can't
I've been
run
going
now.
To the gym.
No, yeah.
And I got my iPad, and I got the CTN going on.
Oh, no!
While I'm on the treadmill.
At the gym? Oh.
At the gym, on the treadmill, I'm yelling at my iPad, and people are thinking I'm nuts.
They're calling the cops. Hey, all right, ma'am, who is it? It's that one over there on the treadmill, officer. What's she doing? She's yelling at her iPad.
Well, I'll just say it's the government. I'm yelling at the government, and they'll be fine.
Your latest installment of the Hartford Portfolio, of course, YankeeInstitute.org, you've already sent up the flare. You're sending up the warning of stuff that you and I talk about every year at this time as we go now, Megan, into the long session, which is where a lot of the sleazy stuff happens and is intentionally hidden from us.
Yeah, it's kind of funny with these lawmakers, because when it comes to them getting elected, they're all about equity and transparency and expanding access. And we have to create all these new voting laws. I mean, we're practically at the point where it's going to be, you can just vote 365 days a year. You can just vote anytime you want. You can
every
just
day.
Vote. So we like that. But then once we get elected, we just forget all that stuff. And it's just like, oh, all this transparency is so 2024. Mm-hmm. But now we're in 2025. And, you know, it's become a joke now amongst, you know, all the reporters and the newscasters out there. You know, when the bills come out and in the middle of the night, they sneak these rats in there, yeah. You know, things that didn't have anything to do with the bill. And it's kind of a joke. And all the reporters, you know, we race to try to like find the rats, like it's a game. But it's not a game. I mean, these things impact our lives and impact, you know, what we pay in taxes. So I whipped up just some non-controversial policy ideas that can make the session a little more accessible, a little more equitable. I'm using all the, you know, the popular buzzwords. Because apparently if you use equity enough,
that's big. Get
anything done.
Equity is big. Yeah, that's a big one, too. And you don't want to use the one you don't want to use is what I call the D word, disenfranchisement. That's another one we have to stay away from. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you want to disenfranchise the electorate, mm-hmm. Continue going with the way we always do it. Like, for example, like we all know the famous Nancy Pelosi phrase, you know, we'll know what's in the bill after we read the bill. We have to pass the bill to know what's in the bill. Like, that's ridiculous. That's not how it should go. So I'm just saying, listen, and if you have if a bill has 100 pages, that's a lot to read in, you know, 15 minutes. Put it out to the public. I'm only asking for 24 hours. I would like more, but I understand we're a part-time legislature, mm-hmm. so things are a little bit quicker. Give us 24 hours. Publish it on the website. Let us all read it. And I say us, I mean, as like the people, not just the media. Mm-hmm. So we can read it and know what's in these things. And then if there's things in there we don't like, we can contact our lawmakers and you know, move forward like that. There's also like the rats. I'm just done with this whole rat thing. Like, put a bill out. Just be honest with what's in the bill. If you want to have a policy, like if you think the policy is good and should stand on its merits, introduce it on its own bill. Stop sneaking things in at the last minute.
Yeah, and Megan,
I mean, every year, it's like on page 789, here's some like random thing that benefits, you know, one person's district and, you know, it's costing millions of dollars. Why are we operating like that? If this was a business, I'd be fired.
Yeah, and people should understand we're not referring to people as rats. And folks, what Megan is talking about,
sorry.
And I know, but I go out of my way to mention it too. There are bills sometimes that are so contentious that they never come up for a full vote because people know they will be branded with voting yes or no on a bill. And basically, Megan, what happens is in the middle of the night while you and I are sleeping and the legislature's dozing on their desks, somebody will reinsert that on page 453 of an 800-page bill, and boom, the next morning we find out it's passed by becoming a rat. And there it is.
Yeah. And then the other thing that they love to do is they don't like to tell it. Like, what's going on during the day? Like, mm-hmm. the House does a really great job with this. Ritter and Rojas, every morning, they have a little press conference. They let us all know what bills they're going to be debating that day.
Yeah.
They publish a list online so you can see it. So, like, if you're an activist or paying attention or following, you know, different bills, you can easily see what they're doing. However, in the Senate, it's just a big secret.
No, yeah.
It's like, why can't we know what you're debating that day? Why do I have to try to, like, hunt down lawmakers, you know, and they're busy. They can't, like, you know, respond to me every second that I have a question.
Yeah.
Like, why can't we just know what you're debating that day? It's not a secret to you guys, you know. And I'm not saying you're going to get penalized if, you know, you say you're going to do something and you don't get to it. No, just like give us an idea. What do you plan on debating that day?
Because
that would just make it so much easier for the public to follow this.
Well, Megan, don't you understand that as far as the Senate is concerned and our old friends Bob Duff and Martin Looney and those people in the Senate, they don't want the great unwashed to know what's going on. How dare we do that? How dare we actually know what's going on in the upper chamber?
Well, then they don't like equity and they don't like transparency and they don't want the process to be accessible, because that's the only reason for not I mean, I'm not saying my policy recommendations are, you know, earth shattering, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not going to win some big award for it. They're just these simple minor tweaks that they can make. And yep. if you're not willing to like work with the public, why are you even doing this job?
Well, listen, I wish you luck, because if I had to watch as much CTN, there's nothing against, look, God bless the fact that we have CTN, but for somebody that watches as much of that as you do, I worry about you. You sure you're okay now? You sure you're
okay? No, I'm fine. Oh, I love it. But and it's, you know what, I like to do it. I get paid to do it, yeah. fortunately. So, and I like to let people know what's going on. So, I mean, it benefits everyone except for the people that I disagree with.
How now, come on. Be honest with me and my listeners, Megan. How many times over the past, say, 2 or 3 years have you been watching CTN? And somebody gets up, we're not going to say who, any individual legislator gets up, and you just sit there and sigh and say, shut up, please.
Oh, it's daily. It is literally like household laughs because I'll be yelling.
Yell at somebody.
I'm like, why? Oh, so are you going to be at the Capitol tomorrow?
No, no, no. God, no.
I'll be there. So if any of your listeners happen to be there, if they have nothing better to do with their lives, come and say hi.
Megan Portfolio. She's going to be the Capitol tomorrow, and she writes the Hartford Portfolio blog. Megan, keep your head down. Be careful of the Capitol, okay?
I will. Bye, Paul.
All right, bye. Megan Portfolio there, the Hartford Portfolio. Yes, she watches the unending debates on CTN live and on replay. So you and I, we don't have to. Joining us right now, another visit from this gentleman who's been keeping tabs for us on the Trump transition, Aaron Navarro, CBS News. Aaron, how are you, sir? Good afternoon. How you been?
Good, Paul. Good to be with you.
Excellent, excellent. Now, are you getting credentials for the United, what are we calling this, when America merges with Canada? What?
The 51st state, as President-elect Trump wants it. You know, we'll see what happens. He made a lot of comments about it during that press conference today.
Yeah, so how was the press, sir? Give us some highlights. He hasn't done too many of these, Aaron. We talked about this earlier. Since he's been, you know, kind of under control by his new chief of staff, but as we get closer now to Inauguration Day, he's starting to speak a little more.
Yeah, he talked a little bit New Year's Eve, but definitely the most lengthy and wide-ranging press conference done the day after his electoral victory was certified in Washington, D.C. A lot that he addressed. The main thing he wanted to get across was this big $20 billion investment from Dammock Properties, and that's expected to be used to build data centers and help build artificial intelligence. But as you know, alluded to, he did talk again about potentially buying Greenland, annexing Canada. And we're getting some fresh reaction, not just to Trump's press conference, but his son's visit to Greenland. The Danish prime minister said in an interview today, Denmark, of course, technically owns Greenland, and said that Greenland's prime minister says that Greenland is for Greenlanders only. Said they appreciate and want to work with the U.S., but again, seems to be pouring cold water on that attempt from Trump. But, you know, seems to be that he sees it as a big military strategic opportunity for them, hoping to curb potentially Chinese attempts to get influence in that, you know, region of the globe.
Yep.
So we'll see if this moves forward any some, but at least the local leaders there seem to be throwing cold water on him.
Darren, what are you hearing from the Trump people regarding some of these cabinet nominees? It appears a few of these are going to fly through with no great opposition, like Marco Rubio for Secretary of State. But again, people still looking at Tulsi Gabbard, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and Kash Patel, and the Democrats saying, hey, they're going to try and slow roll these things as much as possible. What are you hearing, if anything, from the Trump people on that?
Yeah, we know that one of his senior advisors, Jason Miller, was just on Fox News right before you and I started chatting and talked a little bit about how President-elect Trump will be on Capitol Hill tomorrow, mainly to talk about, you know, his agenda that he wants to get done, potentially one bill, two bills, regardless. But definitely would not be surprised if they chat a little bit about some of the confirmation hearings. I know there's been some reports that the Senate Majority Leader there, John Thune, is confident that someone like Pete Hegseth does have the votes to get nominated. Obviously, we'll see when the confirmation process really starts to get rolling in the next couple weeks.
Aaron, also the what we thought was going to be a protracted battle and multiple rounds of voting for House Speaker a few days ago didn't happen. Mike Johnson scraped by. Thomas Massey, who's an interesting guy on his own, I think we can all agree to that. He was the only no vote. And there were other no votes, Aaron, until some guy named Trump got on the phone and apparently said what was needed to be said. And that was a pretty important win for him, wasn't it?
Indeed, and that's part of the reason why you started to see Trump, the president-elect, telegraph his support for Johnson in the days leading up to that big vote in an attempt to try and get those more House Freedom Caucus members that have bucked Trump in the past and generally have elongated this process and tried to get them on board. That's why you only saw, two or three holdouts when it came to the eventual speaker vote. And I think it's important that they kept the vote open so that they were able to change the minds of at least two of those House Republicans and get Mike Johnson elected speaker. But definitely was an effort that Trump wanted. He wanted the unified Republican Party going into that week and generally wants one in Congress with razor-thin margins going into his first weeks of his second term.
And finally, Aaron, on the touchy subject of immigration and some of these immigration raids and forced deportations, what are you hearing internally? I mean, obviously, the notion, I guess, coming from Mr. Trump and Tom Homan is they're going to go after, if they do go after, criminal aliens first. Are they kind of trying to modulate their message on this or not?
I haven't seen an indication of changing that message. You're right in that they seem to be prioritizing those that have criminal records, while not saying that they would not go after them, those who are here illegally. I know during his press conference, he was asked just about the mechanics of how he's looking to undertake his sweeping immigration kind of agenda. Is he relying on Congress? Is he relying on executive orders from the White House? And he seemed to indicate that Congress was not as cooperative as he wanted them to be during his first term. So executive orders seem to be how he's looking at it this time.
Aaron, thank you. And have you bought any property down there yet? Because you've been in West Palm for a long time. So anything catch your eye or not?
No, not yet. Some of these homes might be a little bit out of my price range, but we'll see. Maybe one day.
Aaron Navarro, CBS News in Florida. Aaron, good to chat with you again. Be safe, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks.
Take care.
Okay, Aaron Navarro there from CBS News. So there you go.